This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ana Mateo joins us for a look at 2023's Words of the Year. Then Kelly Jean Kelly is here with the next part of our series on America's presidents. This week, it's George H.W. Bush. But first, Gina Bennett and I present the Higher Education Report. American higher education experts are concerned that small colleges closed at a high rate in 2023. They say college closures can prevent students from finishing their study programs and take away some of the country's unique education offerings. The website Higher Ed Dive notes 26 American colleges and universities either closed or announced their plans to close in 2023. About half that number closed or announced their closing in 2022. The colleges that closed this year were privately funded and mostly small. They were facing a loss of money and a drop in student numbers. Some schools closed completely, while others combined with nearby schools. Most offered students a chance to finish their study programs or move on to another school nearby. Although the schools made efforts to assist their students, professors and others who worked at the colleges lost their jobs.
Alliance University in New York State is one of the schools that closed this year. The university was started by Christian missionaries in New York City in 1880. It offered mostly religious study programs until the 1960s and 1970s, when it expanded to offer programs in education and business. At one point, the university had close to 3,000 students. But the publication Inside Higher Ed reports that the number had dropped below 2,000 in recent years. The school had a budget shortfall of many millions of dollars that it could not make up. After an accreditor reviewed the school's situation last summer, the university announced its plan to close. An accreditor is a group that permits colleges and universities to operate. Heather Garcia worked at the school for many years. She also took classes and earned 2 science degrees there. She said the university asked the accreditor for more time to improve its finances. However, the group decided the school's plan was not strong enough. She said the school was going deeper into debt each year. Garcia also noted that the student population continued to drop after the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. The school knew it was in trouble. It had started new professional training programs in an effort to attract more students. It had also tried to cut spending, but the decision still came as a surprise. Some students were able to finish their study programs over the summer, but others needed to move to new schools. Garcia said she felt especially bad for new students and for those who had come to play on the school's sports teams. The school's last day was August 31st.
The State Higher Education Executive Officers Association, or SHEO, advocates for higher education in the U.S. Last year, the organization produced a report that looked at students affected by college closures. The report covered 467 schools that closed between 2004 and 2020. The major concern of SHEO is that students whose studies get interrupted by a closure often do not go on to graduate. More than half of students do not continue with their studies. Among those who do, only about 37% finish their degree. In some cases, students do not get their school fees returned. In other cases, students have trouble getting their school records to send to other universities. SHEO's report asked that states require colleges to help with these concerns if they close, and said colleges should avoid sudden closures. In 2021, the Hechinger Report noted that students whose schools combine with others also face similar problems. Observers will be watching what happens with the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. The small school recently announced a plan to close in May 2024. An accreditation group said it was concerned about the college's finances for the 2024-2025 school year. The school has been losing money since 2013. It lost $11 million in 2020. Cuts to study programs and changes in leadership did not put the school on a better path.
Brian Alexander is a writer and researcher whose work centers on the future of higher education. He said the small school closures could lead to a one-size-fits-all style of higher education. That style, he said, may not be suitable for students who have learning troubles or special interests in art, music, or language. Alexander said a government push for Americans to go to college that started in the 1980s, combined with a large population of college-aged young adults, helped many small colleges stay open. But now, he said, the costs of college are high. There are fewer college-aged people, and some people are questioning the value of college. The first signs that a college is in danger come when there are reductions in study programs and changes behind the scenes. Alexander was asked if this year's high number of closures is cause for alarm in higher education.
I think within higher ed, the alarm's already been sounded. Presidents, deans, provosts, this is the stuff that keeps them up at night.
Alexander noted that the U.S. is unusual when compared to the rest of the world. The country has a lot of small schools with special study programs. He noted Oberlin College in Ohio and Wesleyan University in Connecticut, but there are many more. In many other countries, universities are generally not smaller than 10,000 students.
You know, all these little small colleges, and they're really special. They're delightful, but they're fragile. They don't have economies of scale.
Economy of scale is a reference to the lower cost of a service per person at a large university when compared to a small college. The cost to provide a study program is much higher per student at a small college. Large American universities with financial problems, such as West Virginia University, are usually able to make changes and continue to stay open. That is because they receive government support. State governments don't want to close the state university, Alexander said. When we see that happen, that will be a big deal. Garcia, who worked at and attended Alliance, said observers may not see her school closing as a large loss in the same way they would if a famous school closed. But for the people who went to school and worked there, she said, it is deeply painful.
It really just felt special. It felt like we had just this little special niche there in the bottom corner of New York City, and that what we were doing was making an impact on the whole world.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Gina Bennett.
As the year 2023 comes to a close, English language dictionary publishers are announcing their choices for Word of the Year. The words usually come from popular usage, news events, or things that are on people's minds. Collins, a British publisher, has named AI as its Word of the Year for 2023. AI, short for artificial intelligence, is a term that describes the modeling of human mental functions by computer programs. AI is increasingly becoming a part of everyday life. Just this year, the Beatles released a song with help from AI. The American toy company Mattel now uses AI to design new toy cars. A Kuwaiti news organization used AI to create Fetha, a female presenter to read the news. AI has also been used to identify an asteroid that could one day present a threat to Earth. One of the best-known AI programs is ChatGPT. The program can have a discussion with people, write books, and create images. The program learns from a large database of books, online materials, and other media. It can produce human-like writing. But sometimes its writings are not correct or do not make sense. When artificial intelligence produces such information, people say that the program has hallucinated. The British dictionary publisher Cambridge chose hallucinate as its word of the year. It says the word gets to the heart of why people are talking about AI. To hallucinate means to seem to see, hear, feel, or smell something that does not exist. But when used in connection to AI, it means to produce false information. Cambridge says generative AI is a powerful tool, but one that we're all still learning how to interact with safely and effectively. The publisher adds that AI hallucinations remind us that humans still need to bring their critical thinking skills to use these tools. The American publisher, Merriam-Webster, chose authentic as its word of the year. Merriam-Webster says it has seen a major rise in searches for authentic in 2023. The publisher says the searches are driven by stories and conversations about AI, celebrity culture, identity, and social media. Authentic has several meanings, including not false, true to one's own personality, and made or done the same way as an original. With the rise of artificial intelligence, Merriam-Webster says the line between real and fake has become increasingly unclear. Other words Merriam-Webster considered include deep fake, coronation, indict, and riz. The editors of the Oxford Dictionary left the selection for Word of the Year to language lovers. Over 30,000 people voted and selected four finalists for Word of the Year. They were Swifty, fans of Taylor Swift, Situationship, an informal romantic or sexual relationship, Prompt, an instruction given to an artificial intelligence program, and Riz. If you are not familiar with Riz, it is time to learn its meaning. It is Oxford's Word of the Year. Riz is believed to come from the word charisma. Oxford says it means having style, charm, or attractiveness. It can also mean the ability to attract a romantic or sexual partner. The word is popular among Generation Z, people born during the late 1990s and early 2000s. Riz can be used as a verb, too. To riz up means to attract, seduce, or chat up a person. Oxford editors said they chose riz as an interesting example of how language can be formed, shaped, and shared within communities before being picked up more widely in society. I'm Anna Mateo.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about George Herbert Walker Bush. Before he became president in 1989, Bush had a lot of experience in government. He spent 4 years in the United States House of Representatives, worked as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and led the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. Then, for 8 years, he was vice president under Ronald Reagan. Interestingly, in U.S. history, a person serving as vice president rarely becomes president after the sitting president leaves office at the end of his term. Before George H.W. Bush, the last time such an event happened was in 1836. At that time, Martin Van Buren took office after the two-term presidency of Andrew Jackson. Yet, neither Bush nor Van Buren was able to deal successfully with some of the problems facing the country during their years in office, or to persuade voters to elect them for a second term. While many people respect Bush for his foreign policy successes, his years in office are also remembered as a time of economic problems and social unrest. George Bush was born into a wealthy family in Massachusetts and raised in a Connecticut town near New York City. He had three brothers and a sister. Their father was a business leader who became a U.S. senator. Their mother was active doing public service work. The family employed servants, but Mrs. Bush did not want her children's privileged position to make them think they were special. Instead, she taught them to work hard and help others. When he was a young man, George Bush moved away from home to attend a private high school in Massachusetts. There, he played baseball and soccer and was elected student body president. On his 18th birthday, Bush joined the U.S. Navy. For 3 years, he fought in World War II. At the time, he was the youngest pilot in the Navy and earned a medal for bravery. In early 1945, he married a young woman he had met at a dance. Her name was Barbara Pierce. After the war, she and George moved to Connecticut, where he studied economics at Yale University and played on the school's baseball team. In time, they moved to the southern state of Texas. George Bush worked in the oil industry and became president of a company that sold oil drilling equipment. George and Barbara Bush mostly raised their 4 sons and 1 daughter in the Houston, Texas area. Another daughter died of cancer when she was a child. In time, George Bush decided to follow his father's example and enter politics. He became a Republican Party official. Then he was elected to the U.S. Congress, representing part of Houston. Despite having a home in Texas, opponents and the public connected Bush with the East Coast and the upper class. That image created some problems for Bush in the presidential election of 1980. By then, he had held other high offices in the federal government and had been successful as the head of the CIA. But voters liked another Republican candidate, former California Governor Ronald Reagan. Many Americans remembered Reagan from his days in movies and on television. When Reagan was nominated as the party's candidate for president, he asked Bush to be vice president. For 8 years, Bush held the office and worked closely with Reagan on foreign policy and other issues. In 1988, Bush finally won the presidency in his own right. On entering the White House, the new president promised to continue many of Reagan's policies of limited government. While he was a candidate, Bush often said that, if elected, he would not raise taxes. Bush also said that he wanted the United States to be a kinder and gentler nation. He wanted especially to support community organizations in their efforts to reduce crime, homelessness, and drug abuse. He also signed legislation to help people with disabilities and to protect the environment. But Bush faced a number of problems. One was a large budget deficit, created in part by increased military spending during the Reagan years. Another were disputes in Congress with the Democratic Party. And another was a banking crisis. After years of problems in the savings and loan industry, more than 1,000 small financial institutions failed. In time, Congress agreed to spend billions of dollars to help the industry recover. And President Bush had to break his promise not to raise taxes. He pointed out that he needed to balance the budget. However, many Americans and some members of his own party felt betrayed. The economic troubles helped create a mood of unrest in the country. The feeling was strengthened by events around the world. Soon after Bush took office, the Chinese government launched a campaign to stop protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. A few months later, the Berlin Wall came down. The wall separated East and West Germany. Many considered its collapse to be the end of the Soviet Union's control of Eastern Europe. At the same time, the leader of Panama, Manuel Noriega, was threatening Americans. He was also accused of supporting drug traffickers and the drug trade in the United States. Bush answered all the events in a calm, cautious way. He tried to keep good relations with China and the Soviet Union. In time, he ordered military action in Panama, and U.S. troops ousted Noriega. Supporters praised Bush's cool head and way of doing things. But critics questioned Bush's decisions. Some said he went too far. Others said he did not go far enough. The same criticisms and support were repeated during the Gulf War against Iraq. In brief, Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein ordered his forces to invade and occupy Kuwait. Bush and other world leaders created an international coalition to seek a diplomatic solution. When diplomacy failed, U.S. troops led international airstrikes against Iraq. Coalition forces also attacked on the ground. In a few weeks, the Iraqi leadership agreed to a ceasefire. Some criticized Bush for letting Saddam Hussein stay in power, but the American public largely approved of Bush's actions. He won praise for helping create an international coalition to answer the Iraqi occupation. The effort showed what some called a new world order. The U.S. and Soviet Union had even worked successfully together. Yet, soon after the end of the Gulf War, Bush failed in his efforts at re-election. The U.S. economy had entered a recession, and Bush was not able to connect effectively with voters, even though those who knew him personally said Bush was a kind, gentle person. One of his last acts as president was to write a note for the candidate who had beat him, wishing him well. George H.W. Bush retired to his home in Texas with his wife, Barbara. They also have a house in Maine. Bush often urged Americans to help others in their community. He put his words into action by volunteering with his church and supporting a local hospital. On his 90th birthday, Bush did something unusual to test his image as a cautious person. He celebrated by going skydiving. For many, Bush is remembered for his connection to other presidents. He is often linked to the Reagan years. Compared to Reagan, Bush is usually considered a less conservative leader, as well as a less charismatic one. By the 21st century, historians began comparing the former President Bush with another president, his son, George Walker Bush, who took office 8 years after his father left it. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English podcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.